Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of G-Thanks Just Bought It, the podcast where we talk about stuff I love and stuff you love and what we're buying and what we're going to buy next. I'm so excited to welcome today's guest. This will come as no surprise to any of you who follow the G-Thanks Just Bought It pod Instagram, my favorite author, Ellen Hildebrand, live from Nantucket. She's here. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. Hi, Caroline.
This is so exciting for me. Ellen, I have probably, I mean, I know that a lot of people say that they're your biggest fan, but I would say that I'm your biggest fan.
I love that.
I'm a huge fan.
A lot of people do say it, but, you know, I have known you for a while as my biggest fan.
Thank you.
So that's good.
Oh my gosh, this validates me incredibly. Yeah. I will look back on whatever kind of clouds my memory of this pandemic, I will be able to remember. I talked to my favorite author and she recognized me as her biggest fan. I remember my journey with you began in 2011. I was at Target. I was going to Martha's Vineyard. That's where my family spent a week every summer since I was in utero. And, you know, Target always has sort of like the best of the best, like mainstream best-selling books. And The Island was sitting right there. And I thought, that sounds appropriate. Martha's Vineyard's an island. I read the back of the book. I said, cool, I'm sold. And that was the first year I actually got a Kindle. So like I finished The Island, I think on the drive up. Like I was done before we got on the ferry. And so I spent the rest of the week just being like, okay, you know, at that point it's 2011. So that's probably like the midway. You probably had like what, 6 or 7 books by then before The Island, or a little bit more?
It was my 9th.
Okay.
I think it was my 9th book.
Okay. So
I'm going to go with 9. Yeah, it was my 9th book.
So
yeah.
I got to go back and I bought everything on the Kindle and I think I read all of them that week and just one after the other after the other. It was the best. And like, then when I realized you come out with a, at that point, you came out with a book every kind of Memorial Day time.
Yes,
I was so excited. And then the winter book started coming out and I was so excited. I befriended your publicist. I email Catherine at your publisher all the time. I just can't get enough. And now I have gotten so many people on board with Ellen. I am like, do you want a good read that like will not depress you or, you know, require too much brain power, but I mean it as a compliment. Like it's like watching a good movie, your books. Like you, it's like lay down, put your pajamas on, get a snack. Like there's not going to be a test. Like we're not, you know what I mean? It's like, just delish. My proudest sort of, I think, influence has been on my like very like serious and literary, like blah, blah, blah. Like they love you. They're obsessed. Yeah. I have gotten so many texts through this saying, what Ellen should I read next? I'm on my last Ellen. I'm going to read this Ellen. Like literally friends from all circles. So this is so exciting. And no one has ever gotten back to me and said, you know what? That really wasn't for me. Thanks for the recommendation. So you really like, you have perfected the craft.
Wow.
Yeah. I just can't say it enough. It's great.
Thank you. Thank you.
You and I have talked before. We talked, I'll link it in the show notes, but you and I chatted in like 2016. I think I interviewed you about being the queen of the beach read and kind of, we talked about chick lit and what do you think about like being called, I don't know, like beachy reads or chick lit? Like, how does that make you feel as a graduate of like the most prestigious creative writing school in the country?
You know, it really is a complicated question, honestly, because on the one hand, like my materialistic side, which let's start there because since it's G Thanks just bought it. G Wiz, what's the name of the podcast?
G Thanks just bought it. No, you got it. You got it. You got it.
Is being called the queen of the beach read sells books. It does. People, women, men too, in summer, want something light. And when I say light, I mean engaging, and you don't have to decode it.
Exactly.
It's not going to bum you out, freak you out, but you need to be immediately engaged. And I really need to say that I bring my Iowa background to these beach books. So what does that mean? That means that I suffered through two hellish years in Iowa City at an extremely competitive, extremely intense experience. So we've all seen Girls, right?
Yes.
And when Lena Dunham goes to Iowa, she must have had someone on her staff, I believe she did, who went. And this is what was tough about Iowa, is you didn't take any classes. You went to your workshop once a week, and you could take literature classes, which I did. I took one literature class per week. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the time was yours. And it was so difficult. I was 26, 27, 28 when I was there. Yeah. To make yourself write, because they expected that you would write, but you just, and you know, she's sort of wandering around her kitchen.
Yeah.
Because she just, you have all day to write and there's no motivation. So at some point in Iowa, I developed the self-motivation to get it done. And I was pretty much alone in that. So there were a lot of extremely talented writers, way, way, way more talented than myself at Iowa, but I became the person that could finish things. And that is why I am now doing what I'm doing.
Incredible.
So I bring my Iowa background, which is very literary, to the beach books. So I think that my beach books have a little bit more heft, a little bit more craft maybe. And I don't want to sound completely immodest, which I completely do, but they have a little something more.
That's why everyone loves
so
them.
So that,
yes,
you know, basically I'm trying to be the best in class at doing the beach book. It's not stupid. I
right.
deplore people who call it trash or fluff. It is neither of those things.
Yes.
But it is meant to be escapism. It is meant to be the highest quality escapism that you can get. But that's essentially what it is.
That is a brilliant way of describing it. Cause like that is now I'm gonna adopt that language when I'm selling it to other people who, like, I don't know who I haven't reached yet about Ellen Hildebrand books, but if you're out there, come to me. Remember I was like giving everyone a quiz. I was like, do you like family murder? Do you affairs? And I was like giving everyone a start. That is the perfect way to describe your books, because there are a lot of books in the world, in the airports, in the Targets, with beach umbrellas and Adirondack chairs and like very colorful towels. And I get so excited when I see them, because I'm like, well, I've already read all of Ellen's books 19,000 times. Like maybe there's like I'm constantly Googling if I like Ellen Hildebrand, like who else will I like? And there's a lot of options. But like, unfortunately, when you start with the best at the craft, it is very difficult to get used to someone else's. It's like a lot of the same subject matter and not as good of the writing. And you're like, well, I mean, if I'm reading a book about someone fighting with their sibling, you know, on a beautiful beach island, I'm going to go back and reread the identicals instead of like having to slog through a book that I don't I'm not really engaging with. And so what I'm saying is, if you could just start writing like 6 or 7 books a year, that would really help me personally. So if you could get on that.
You're killing me. I know.
I would really appreciate it. It's funny because, you know, I wrote a book, which you were so gracious to blurb. And God, it just took forever. And like, my God, it is like such a process. And like, you're so excited in the beginning. And then you're so excited at the end when it comes out and you can hold it in your hand. But that middle part where you actually have to like do it is very difficult to get that motivation. Yeah. But I assume you must have a regimen and a routine. Can you tell us a little bit about like how you are writing 2 books a year?
Well, again, kind of a complicated question. So I have learned over the years certain things, and these are the things that I've learned. So the most important thing, believe it or not, with my writing is I exercise every morning and I get up and I go running. I just bought a Peloton. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
I just bought a Peloton. So my morning is now at this point, three parts. It's Peloton. I go running and then I do a bar class online.
Oh, I'll never write another book if this is what it is.
It takes like 3 hours. And then after 3 hours, but I do it as a discipline because it's the discipline that sets up my day. So that is like, okay, that is done. Check that box. And then, you know, I normally finish between 10:30 and 11 and I have the rest of the day to write. Wow. And I do not put a time. I don't put a time limit. I don't put a word count.
Okay.
I just am constantly like, what am I going to do today? I need to do this scene. And if I get into the scene and it's working, I keep going. My most productive time of day is between 3 and 6, which is extremely inconvenient for me when I was trying, my kids were in school. I had to go pick them up, drop them off and
that's
go to
like,
sports.
That's when you're with them. Yeah.
Right. And I was like, oh, this is awful. But it just happened to be like, that was my super productive time.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically I start writing the summer book, let's say May 1st.
Okay.
Okay. And I write that and I finish that at Halloween. I turn it in to my editor on November 1st. So it takes 6 months.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
It really takes 7 months, but I got, you know, especially this year, I got a late start.
That's incredible.
So it takes about 7 months. And then I hand it in and my editor, I've had a switch of editors, but in the past, my mm-hmm. editor is brilliant and wonderful. And she gives me the changes. And then I take an apartment in Boston for 6 weeks away from my children, away from everyone. It's a studio apartment. It is teeny tiny. I live there by myself as a recluse. Again, I do my exercising and I get takeout food. And those are the only 2 times I leave the house.
Wow.
And I just rewrite the book, revise, revise, revise. It's extremely intense. I do that for 6 weeks. I hand the book in when? At Christmas.
Wow.
So again, my poor children, like I've never had like the whole build up to Christmas.
Right.
Because I'm always working. It's yeah. the most intense period. 1 year I missed Christmas entirely, oh the year God. Of Silver Girl.
Really?
And,
okay.
Yeah. It went through 6 revisions. Oh anyway, then I turn it in at Christmas. And then in January, right after the new year, I start the winter book.
Wow.
And the winter book goes
from January to May.
It's due in April.
Oh my God.
I've started going to St. John for 5 weeks.
Yep.
Again, without the children, because that gets me into a beautiful location. And especially, you know, the greatest thing it gave me is it gave me the subject matter for my winter books.
Yeah. Which are amazing. The Paradise series.
The Paradise series.
Yeah.
And I did get caught in St. John this year for the quarantine. So I ended up, I was there for, I always go for 5 weeks and I ended up extending 2 weeks. So I was there for 7 weeks. I'm going to say this without sounding like a real jackass. At the end of 7 weeks, I was like, I don't think I can stay here another day.
I totally.
Which was surprising.
Yes,
to me.
Of course. I mean, you want to be home.
I wanted to be home.
I get that.
And I mean, it is such paradise and it is so beautiful and the weather is so perfect and the water is so gorgeous and I don't have any, you know, nothing to do but write. I could have, in theory, stayed longer. And I just thought, this is just delaying the inevitable and I need to get home and see my children. And
it sounds like
anyway.
A great routine. I mean, I imagine, you know, when I one day get to the point where I'm writing 2 books a year and I'm on my 24th book, you know, I could put together that schedule for myself. I hope so. The motivation to write is the hard part. I'm going to have to cut. I will not exercise 3 hours a day before I write, but I might have to do something like it.
You
just
need one thing.
I got to do one thing. And then it's like, you go into the day. What was your routine like when you were writing like your first book? And I know that what was your first book that like hit the bestseller and then all your books went retroactively.
So that was Barefoot.
Barefoot.
That happened in 2000. Well, I sold it at the end of 2006. It was published in the summer of 2007. I had switched publishers because the first 5 books, you know, they just didn't do well. They didn't, my publisher, whose name I will not mention, did not publish them correctly, did not have any faith in me, did not see a big star. They see a big star now.
Yeah.
They love me now. But at the time, you know, I would complain. I mean, Caroline, they were paying for nothing. They didn't do any advertising. They would send me to book events. This was like the most humbling experience.
Yeah.
So what you have to know is the Beach Club came out in the year 2000. My first son, Max, had been born in November of 99.
Wow.
So my first summer, I have a baby, I have a 6-month-old. And when I went to do an event like on the Cape, and I was so excited. I'm like, this is my book signing. I am so excited. They didn't pay for my travels. So I would get the boat ticket. I'd rent a car, my own dime. I'd go to the bookstore with my child in the bucket seat. Wow. And I would go to the bookstore and like three people would show up and nobody knew who I was. Right. I mean, how are they gonna know who I was? And, you know, it would be like a massive, massive, just humbling experience. Like, okay, I thought I was so cool because I had my book published. And yet at the same time, it's the selling of the books, the building of the brand. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
You look at a book like Crawdads, that just doesn't happen.
Right.
I mean, it obviously does happen, but it...
That is not the rule. That is the exception.
That is not the norm.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the writers that we all love, they build a readership. And so the book Summer of 69 debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. That was
incredible.
A massive accomplishment.
Wow.
That was not an overnight success. That was years and years and summers and summers and summers of building the readership and getting to the top. And so that is something I'm very, very proud of. In fact, I think I'm going to cry. So proud.
You should. I'm going to cry. You should. That's
so
amazing.
So proud of not me, of my publisher and me, of not deviating, of not skipping a year, of not turning in a shitty book over the course of those 20 years.
Yep.
Of just building and building and building on a product and a brand. And finally, and it was my 50th, you know, it was the summer of my 50th birthday. Wow. And finally at age 50 to be like, I am number one. I had to beat stupid ass Crawdads. Forget I said that. I had to beat, but that's how I
no, absolutely.
That's how I felt about it.
Absolutely. That's frustrating.
That's how I felt about it.
Yeah.
Because it had been at the top for so long. And then, you know, of course the hilarious thing is it's still like now I'm going into year two and
crazy.
You know, I'm looking at my competition for the bestseller list, you know, in a couple of weeks and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's still Crawdads. I can't even believe it. It's still Crawdads.
It is so, that is so amazing. That's just so amazing. And it's also like, you have to love writing. And I'm saying this, not, I don't know how many of my listeners are also writing books, but as somebody who is writing books, it's like, you know, you did this before social media, like you did this before, like you could really kind of like, you had to rely on, you know, I had to remember it while you were talking, because I was like, well, who cares about your publisher? Like, you know, you can do all this stuff on your own. Like a lot of stuff. I mean, my publisher was great. And, you know, our book publicist for Hey Ladies was great. But a lot of the stuff we could do, it's like start an Instagram, start a Twitter account, like do all this, like do your interviews. You can't do that in 2000. It's like you are relying on someone to literally like market your wares for you. And to think that you continued to write 5, 6, 7 more books before you actually got any sort of like end game fulfillment of it. It's like, wow, like, okay, so you actually like writing. Like, this isn't just like, oh yeah, like I'll just like write some books, like whatever.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Not only that, but the, you know, the first novel, this happened to me twice, the first novel and the fifth novel, both got People magazine reviews and my publisher had not printed enough copies. And so they ran out of copies. And this is long before the Kindle, the iPhone, any of that. So you know, if you run out of copies, you're screwed. You can't. It's not like, oh, you're going to download it on your Kindle.
Wow.
I know. We were like flat out of copies. And it was very frustrating. Like that was like the most frustrating thing, because the first book did well. It got the People magazine book of the week. And I almost fainted. I was like, oh, I'm going to be a big star now. But, you know, they'd only printed 2,500 copies. So those sold out. And then,
and then you know, what else do you do?
Right. It was very challenging. The first 5 years were very, very challenging.
That I'm very motivated. Well, you know what? We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back, because we have to take a quick break, or my editor, Veronica. Hi, Veronica, is like, Caroline, you got to take a break. We're taking a break and then we're coming back. Okay. Don't even want to skip a beat. I just feel like that is so motivating for me. All the things you're saying are motivating for me. One, that, you know, it's something that I would say as someone who is very, you know, very early on in my writing career. But like, if people ask me for advice, I'm like, you know, you don't have to have a perfect first draft. Just like get it out. You know, that's what the editing process is for. But then when I sit down, I'm like, well, okay, but I have to have the perfect first draft. So like my whole process has been like abandoning this idea that like I have to give my agent or my editor like a perfect book. At this point, you know, how much, like, when you're writing, are you like, do you ever write and you're just like, I will, like, that will come back in the editing? Or, like, do you work it out on the page during your draft?
You know, I would have to say, like, 95% of it I work out on the page. There are things that sometimes I make myself notes and I'm like, I need to come back and look at this later. But I don't, I generally, when I hand it into my editor, it's pretty close.
Wow.
To everything is pretty much worked out. Okay. I want to say something though. I want to say something.
Yes.
I finished the third book in the Paradise trilogy a few weeks ago. And I finished the first draft and I was absolutely thrilled. Now keep in mind, this is the third book in the trilogy. So I know the characters. This is the third time I've been with them. Mm-hmm. I really felt like I had nailed a landing that was going to be, it has to be two things. It has to be sort of surprising. And oh my gosh, this makes perfect sense. So I turned it in and I was not anticipating doing that many revisions. And I have a new editor because my editor went to Knopf. I loved her so much. She's gone. My new editor is as fabulous, absolutely wonderful. She made all these suggestions and said, go in and change this and this and this and this. And it was a lot more work than I anticipated. You will always, always make it better. And I turned it in the second draft, and I don't even ever want anyone to look at the first draft. I was like, I made it so much better. You will always make it better with a revision. And this is why, you know, the characters at this point, and you know, sort of the plot, and you can only, especially like with a really good editor, you will only make it better. And I was really shocked with that was going to be my 26th book that I, you know, at how you're still learning, it's still a process and you have to go through the process. You have to go through the process.
That makes me feel a lot better. I'm a perfectionist at heart and I also have zero patience. So put those two together. Writing a novel is a difficult task for me, even though it's something that I'm working on and that I want to do and that I've done. I mean, technically, Hey Ladies has been done, but it's like it is so hard to not want to like nitpick every sentence. Like first get your story out, then you can go back and then you can also develop the characters, and also the characters are going to develop as you're writing the story. And it's like this whole sort of like out of order process that, I mean, I just think like it's incredible what you've done. I am in awe all the time. I've now been a fan for now nearly a decade and like still just such a huge fan. I know that you know this because I know that you saw the Instagram, but I was telling listeners, so whenever I recommend one of your books, I give them I say, rank these four things, and then I will pick out a book. I said, I think it's love affairs, like murder or mystery, family drama, and then teens, like anything that has to do with like kids. So whenever anyone, and I want to know if you would pick the same ones I would. So when anyone ever says like murder mystery, I always say The Castaways to start.
Okay.
When anyone says love affairs, I do A Summer Affair. Right. And family drama, I actually usually go with Silver Girl because I think that's like a good, I also think that's a good introduction book to your books because it like mirrors a real life event. It's like very Ruth Madoff. And then the teen drama Summerland. What would you pick the same ones or would you go different?
Well, I would definitely, if someone said murder, I would say The Perfect Couple. Which not have been, that wasn't accessible obviously to you until just recently.
Right. Right.
But that is, the murder
definitely,
and the cast before that I would definitely would have said The Castaway. And the two are like weirdly connected.
They are
connected.
They are.
What was number two? Love affairs is
I said A Summer Affair. But I always go back and forth between The Love Season or Boo Bistro or The Matchmaker. Well, The Matchmaker, yeah, I know. I mean, there's like five books under any one of these.
Yeah.
Different, you know, it's funny.
Yeah. And then teen drama, definitely Summerland. Mm-hmm. Although there is some good teen drama in The Identical. Mm-hmm. And don't I have teenage characters in another book?
You have.
I feel like I
do. Well, Nantucket Nights is a real.
Nantucket Nights. Yes. I mean, that has. That's but Summerland.
That is
Summerland
everything.
Is one of my top.
I love Summerland.
It's one of my top three favorites.
And then the other one I said was, oh, Silver Girl for family drama, just because I love.
And Silver Girl for that. Family drama. So for me, for family drama, like Beautiful Day. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what else has the teens is The Rumor. The Rumor has some good teens.
The Rumor is wonderful. The Rumor is also, you said you go to Boston for 6 weeks and hole up Madeline in The Rumor. Yes. Also gets her own little apartment to write her book.
She does. Doesn't really work out for her.
It doesn't. You guys, can you tell how obsessed I am? I like Ellen, please, 7 books a year. That's all I'm asking. You can do it. I believe in you. You got the Peloton. You can do 7 books a year. I know it. I am so thrilled. Your 24th book comes out in mid-June. I have had it sitting on my shelf, and I refuse to go past page 30 because I was like, I'm going to need this summer. So it is just sitting there taunting me because I want to read it with my friends, and I have an early galley. So I'm just, what's the point of getting a galley if I'm going to wait until it comes out? But it's coming to my Kindle. I bought it. It comes to my Kindle, and then I have the hard copy. 28 Summers. The funny thing about 28 Summers, and I've been dying to know your thoughts on this, is like, it's so it mirrors real life. So you go through every summer. So basically the story is tells the story of this friendship relationship over the course of 28 summers, and every chapter begins with the summer of X year, and every beginning chapter. And I know this because I flipped through it, but I have not read it. I refuse to, not until it comes out. Every summer is like, okay, it's this summer. Like, here's what we're talking about. This is what's going on this summer. You have to guess before you write about summer 2020, what we're going to be talking about. So it's like, the presidential election, like all this stuff. I did not see pandemic, quarantine.
Okay, so what happened was, okay, so this is really funny. All right, so as Caroline says, the basis for 28 Summers is same time next year. So this couple meets on Nantucket in 1993, and they have an affair. This will be the ultimate love affair book for Ellen Hildebrand.
I can't wait.
They have an affair for 28 summers, always Labor Day weekend. And at the beginning of each day, we go summer by summer, and the beginning of each chapter is a rundown of what happened in that year. So when I'm finishing this book in December of 2019, mm-hmm. I am thinking to myself that the number one story on May 18th, 2020 is going to be the election, and we're going to be, at that point, I don't even know who the candidate is, but we're going to be really freaking out about the election. Okay. Yep. It goes at some point, like Kobe Bryant dies. And
yes,
I said
that
to
was
my,
late January. Yep.
I said to my boyfriend, I feel like I should call my copy editor and add that into 2020. But it felt very like it would be sticking out because it would be Kobe Bryant dies and then the election.
Right.
Copy edits happen at the end of March, and she says, do you want to change anything about the first paragraph of 2020? And I'm like, yeah. So now it says what happens in 2020, and it says Kobe Bryant, COVID-19, Zoom, TikTok, social distancing.
Oh my God, like great.
So it is mentioned, but I mean, then that was like a March view. It was a March view on the pandemic.
Yeah, March was different.
It was not like a May view on the pandemic. So,
I'm so glad that you got to do that. And also so glad that I have this. Now I'm going to have this rare galley copy that has no mention of COVID-19.
It will be historically important, honestly, like to have that copy because we could talk literally the rest of our lives about this, but how suddenly and strangely the world completely changed.
Absolutely.
And how nobody was prepared for it. But okay.
Yes. I mean, I was going to make a comment, which I'm not going to make. Yes. I wish people were more prepared is what I would say. And when I mean people, I'm talking about specific people. That is so exciting because that is the one thing that I was like, oh, darn. Like, she's usually right on the money and like there's no way she could have known. And I'm so happy that you got to put it on, put it in. Well, now I'm going to never. I mean, also my copy I have a whole Ellen shelf in my bookshelf. And my copy of Summer of 69 is signed. I was going to send off my galley and hope that Catherine could swap it with a signed copy, but now I'm never getting rid of it. Right. Because now it is historic to me. Yeah, I was reading it and it's like summer 2020. Like, I wish we were talking about the election. I wish anything was different.
Right.
Have you noticed that Nantucket's filling up? Like, it's about to become summer in Nantucket. What is the vibe?
It's been, I'm like 100% the wrong person to ask. And yet at the same time, everybody is the wrong person to ask. I have not left the house.
Good.
Except to, exercise like by myself.
Right.
And then I go to the grocery store, the liquor store.
Yeah. Important.
I did go to the post office last week by myself. But I mean, the restaurants are closed.
Yes.
The shops are closed.
Yep.
Everything's closed.
Right.
So I have noticed like there is a little bit more traffic. My kids, I mean, the most challenging thing for me with the pandemic and I, obviously, as with all human experience, the spectrum is wide.
Yeah.
And I am definitely on the privileged end of the spectrum.
Me too.
At the very end. And I do not complain, but I do have children that are 18 and 20. And it's very difficult to keep them from hanging out with their friends.
Oh, I bet.
Especially on Nantucket, where it's an island and they can't go anywhere.
Right.
They literally can't go anywhere.
They're literally on an island. They're on an island. Like that
and they've
is.
It's hard to argue with them because they've all quarantined. It's very clear none of them have it. There are only 13 cases on the island and we haven't had a new case in 3 weeks.
Wow.
And so it's very difficult to say, oh, well, you might catch it. They're not going to catch it. And so it's very difficult to keep them.
That is hard.
From hanging out with
and
their
friends.
And
they're also, I'm sure they give you the argument, I'm a legal adult. I'm 18. Right. I can make my own choices. And you're like, well, buy your own food or like,
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Pay for your own cell phone. That must be really difficult. I was thinking at the very beginning of this, back in March, the month that lasted 196 years, my parents would have murdered me and hid my body under the porch, like on day three. Like if I were a teenager and I was living through this, I mean, they at least have phones. Like, I didn't have a phone. No. I didn't have anything. Like, oh my God, they would have killed me. I also would have been sneaking out. I would have just, you're a teenager. You don't have like a sense, like none of them. I mean, like they're all too young. It's like your world is your friends and your school and your parents and that's it. And you're not, and especially when you're on Nantucket, oh my God, I can't believe you guys are all being such good citizens of the world. If you hadn't had a case in 3 weeks, it would be really hard to not go outside and just like, take your chances. But So we're going to take another quick break and we'll be right back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Okay, we're back. Ellen, I'm friggin' pumped to see what you brought. To G Thanks Just Bought It. What did you bring? I don't even know what it is. Lay it on me.
Okay, so I am obsessed with a website out of Brooklyn called Food 52.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody who reads my books or looks at my Instagram, I'm an at-home gourmet chef. And I don't mean to say that like I'm so talented. In fact, I do a cooking show on my Instagram stories called The Cringe Cooking Show. Everything is poorly executed, poorly chopped. My kids don't care. They're not picky. I've never had any classic training, which is super obvious when you watch me. But I do have enthusiasm and I love, I do not count calories. I'm not allergic to anything. It is full fat.
Anything goes.
Anything goes. The more butter and cheese and mayonnaise. I love mayonnaise.
I'm coming over for food at your house. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So my favorite purchase from Food 52 is my Greek peppermill. I'm showing it to you because we are on FaceTime.
Yes.
And it is made of brass. It has a key design on it. And I really feel like everybody should have, even if you're the most casual, even if you're getting takeout, honestly, Caroline, you should have an actual legitimate pepper grinder.
Okay. Why?
Because the freshly cracked pepper is just the most, it's the simplest seasoning you can add other than salt. I mean, we all have to have salt,
Right.
but you don't have to have anything other than freshly cracked pepper. It makes a difference. If I see like a sad little pepper shaker, that's sad. Everybody, no matter your age, needs it. I believe it retails for $89. It is worth every penny. I use it
Really?
multiple times a
How
day.
long have you had it?
I bought it in August.
Okay.
So I've had it let's say 9 months.
Okay.
I absolutely love it. And it is not going to break, and it's easy to fill, and it has a very satisfying sound when you turn the crank.
That's important.
And Food 52, the Greek peppermill.
That is
Cannot
awesome.
beat it. And then when you get in the site, you're just going to be just sucked
Buy
into everything
everything.
else.
I know. I've seen aprons on Food 52. I don't even cook that much, and if at all. And like everyone knows, my husband's the cook in this house. And I say this like every episode it comes up. My husband's the cook in this house. But I just think a cute apron would make me feel better. So maybe that'll be on a purchase too. 89 feels steep for a pepper mill, but like. But also, like, I understand when it's like this thing brings me so much joy. I use it every day, and it
And you're
actually
gonna
makes
have
a
it the
difference.
rest of your
Right.
life. I
We're
mean,
gonna
that's the other thing.
die with
So,
this
I
pepper
mean,
mill.
I had a pepper mill that when I got married many moons ago, it was given to me and my ex-husband as a wedding gift. And it was a wooden pepper mill, the kind that they used to have in restaurants, like the big tall one.
Yep. I think my parents have that one too. Yep.
And I loved it so much. And it was even better because it was a gift. And I used it, used it, used it, used it, used it. And it just shit the bed. And so I was like, all
Wow.
right, now it's time to get another pepper mill, and you will have it. This one's made of metal. It is beautifully made. You're going to have it the rest of your life.
I love
So
that.
you're
That
good.
is such a that's a conversation we have often on the show, which is like, do you invest in the $90 thing or do you buy the $10 thing, knowing that like every year and a half you're gonna have to buy another $10 thing? And
Right.
we had this conversation, I think, with Lisa Tozzi. We talked about this Biologique Recherche lip balm, which is literally like $48, but it actually, right, the face Ellen is making right now in FaceTime, it's like, oh my God, who's buying $48 lip balm when a chapstick is like $2.99? But then
Right.
it's like, how many times have you bought like a balm for your face when your face is chapped, and it's like, this doesn't work? And then it's like you find the thing that works, and you're like, well, I've definitely spent more than $48 on various chapsticks and Vaselines and stuff that like doesn't do anything for the problem I'm trying to solve. So like
Right.
the one, it almost, I don't know, I think that some people kind of get it mixed up in terms of like, well, yeah, if you add up all of the times you paid for all of these different variations of this thing, you probably spent more than the expensive version of it. And it
Yeah.
feels like this pepper grinder, like, goes into that category, which is like, if you buy like a plastic, $7 pepper grinder, is it gonna break? Is it gonna stain? Is it gonna like,
Is it gonna just look crappy
is it
in
gonna
your
look
Instagram photos? Like
important? That is important.
if you're a cook, I feel like every actual fairly serious cook has an actual pepper grinder.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, if you're even just a casual, if you're getting takeout every night, like to have this pepper grinder, really, you're adding your own spice,
Yes. I live with someone who I live with someone. My husband cooks with spices all the time. I grew up in, I don't know if my mom's listening. She might be. Mom, I'm gonna call you out. I didn't really know about salt until I was like 26.
Oh my
Like
gosh.
she my mom is Irish, like, 100% Irish, grew up in like Irish. And I've talked to my other friends who are like from like very Irish families, and it's like, this is a thing. Like, salt was like not a thing when my mom was growing up. Like, they just didn't like, yeah. So I just thought salt was like bad for you. And so when my friend Annie, in 2013, yeah, I was in my mid-20s, was teaching me how to cook this like beet soup, and then she's like, and you want to put like a pretty good, thing of salt in. And I was like, oh, Annie, like, you're so healthy. Like, what are you talking about? Salt? And she's like, Caroline, that's what makes food taste good. And then, like, truly, like a mind-blowing experience for me. Like, yes, sodium, whatever. But like, I did not realize that like you can put like a little pinch of salt on anything that you're eating. and the flavor will come out. And I have been spending my, you know, 30s figuring out that a lot of food I didn't like growing up is because I think it was just lacking some flavor and
right.
We were just not a salt family. And, you know, and I remember also the other end of the spectrum was like the friends at the diner who with the French fries and the hamburger would show up and then they'd pour salt on it. And you're kind of like, but I kind of see their point now. So like, it's very exciting to me to realize that, I mean, beyond the, all the spices that are all in like all these different kinds of food, but like even a salad, a little bit of salt and a little bit of pepper goes a long way. Yeah. A sandwich. And I'm like, wow, my world is opening up, you know, I'm new horizons. But like, yeah. I imagine we also have a kitchen where everything is sort of on display. It like connects with our living room. It's really open concept. So for the first time, which was not the case in New York, I had a small kitchen. It was sort of tucked in the back. It didn't really matter because like when people would come over, not that anyone's coming over right now, when people would come over, like no one was seeing the... my wares in the kitchen, but now it's like a decorative event,
right?
So like I can imagine having a nice pepper grinder would be like kind of like a piece of art that goes in your salad.
It is, but I use it every day. I mean, you're gonna use it all the time.
Yeah, every day. I mean, right now that I know about salt and pepper, like
that's right.
The world is my oyster. That's also a very good. For those of you getting married or putting things on your registry, it's a very good wedding gift.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Right in the, you know, you'd almost rather get an expensive-ish version of something than a cheapish-ish version of something expensive. So it is a great wedding gift.
It's a great wedding
gift. Perfect wedding gift.
And especially because weddings, if no one has told you yet, and especially in the, you know, 2020, when like everyone's already living with their fiance and everyone's, you know, already built this life where it's like you already have all this stuff. The best part of weddings is going through your kitchen and figuring out what you're going to upgrade. So like the pepper mill is like a perfect one. It's like get rid of the $7 one and have your aunt buy you the $90 one. And like now you have
perfect. Perfect.
I love that. Are your kids cooks, or do they like to cook? Or are you solely do you run the kitchen?
I run the kitchen.
Okay.
They are, you know, my 20-year-old is like, Mom, can you make me food? He couldn't even. There's chicken salad in the fridge, and then bread, and you stick the bread in the toaster, and then put the chicken salad on the bread and cut it in half. No. He would like me to do it. They don't do any cooking and part of this just because that is like that's one of the like I feel like as far as parenthood goes, whole other topic, but as far as parenthood goes, there are things that you're good at and things that you suck at.
Yep.
That is true for everybody.
Yep.
Honestly. And one of the things that I'm good at is cooking and feeding these people that I gave birth to. That is a strength.
I love it.
I have many other areas where I completely suck, but feeding them is my strength, and so I've always just done it.
And then also you get to the kitchen is your domain, and that no one's there messing up your system, which is a big thing in my parents' house. It's like someone put the thing in the wrong place and no one can find the thing. I love that. I think that's great. I can't believe we've been talking for like 45 minutes. I wish we could go on forever. The Food 52 pepper grinder, it's $89. It's on the Food 52 website. Do you see it used in Food 52 videos? Like, does it like come out a lot, or is it like something?
Yes. Okay. That might even have been how I discovered it. But I was like, oh, look, they have that pepper grinder. And the thing about Food 52 is it's this website that's run by these Brooklyn chefs. I mean, it doesn't get any, this is just like, it's like so Brooklyn. So they tested, you know, all of these different products and they curate the site like very carefully so that this is absolutely, and you feel confident if you believe in, you know,
what they're selling.
Intelligentsia in Brooklyn, like it's very thoughtfully curated that this is the best pepper grinder for the money that you're going to get. And they are not out to upsell you or sell you anything that's not going to work. Like it is a correct website.
I love that. Well, we're big fans of Food 52 here. And I'm going to have to check out this pepper grinder. And also because I do have friends who are getting married, whether the weddings are are happening or not. The marriages are going on. And so I have gifts to get. And this seems like one, maybe everyone's going to get a pepper grinder from me this year. Yeah.
And it's such a great present.
It is. That's a really great present. And it's really pretty. Can you hold it up again so I can look at it? I mean, you guys will obviously picture. It's really pretty. It's just very pretty. And it's classic.
And then they might say, this is so great. Like I never would have splurged on this for myself.
Yes.
But now we have it and we feel like adults and it's gorgeous and you can, you know.
That's true. Yeah, it's also, forget weddings too. Like holidays, like that's the kind of thing that does make a great gift because you can basically guarantee that unless someone is very serious about their kitchen, you know, they're probably not splurging on an expensive pepper grinder, but if they get it, they're not mad about it. Like,
it's beautiful. Oh, I'm definitely going to use that.
Right. It makes your kitchen look so like fancy. It'll go right next to my KitchenAid, which I also got for my wedding, which was very exciting.
Right.
So we will link to the pepper grinder. I'm going to link to like all of Ellen's books. I'm going to make everyone take the ranking test so I can give you the Ellen book of your dreams. Shout out to Erica Mills, who was on the podcast right in the beginning when we kind of started, but she just read her first Ellen yesterday in one day. She read The Castaways and now she is on to The Perfect Couple. And I said, that's great because they're related in certain ways. And yeah, I just can't say enough. We are definitely going to do an Ellen book for the G-Thanks book club, probably in August or September. It's going to be wonderful. If you guys have not picked up your first Ellen book, what are you waiting for? Get hooked. Get hooked like the rest of us. Ellen
Hildebrand. It is not what you think. I mean, we can say that. It is not what you think. It's better than you think.
It is so much better. Before we sign off, I just want to point out that the thing that I've kept in my head forever since we talked like 4 or 5 years ago was that you said everyone at Iowa made fun of you or rolled their eyes at you because all you could write about was Nantucket and the beach and everyone else was trying to write about death or like morose stuff.
Yeah.
But you're the best-selling author. Like you're the like best-selling 24 books, multiple books a year author. Any advice to anybody who is nervous that they are not, that they don't have the life experience, the vast travel knowledge to really sit down and write a novel?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like everybody is going to write their book. So you don't need to write a Nantucket summer novel. You need to write the book from your experience and your heart and your story. And it's valid, whoever you are, whatever your experience is, it's valid and it's interesting, but you have to really get to the heart of it and get to the real stuff of it. But everybody's story has a story in them that's interesting and that's worthy of a novel. So you just have to figure out what that is. I mean, just make sure it's yours. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's yours. And even, you know, I said something unkind about Crawdads, but Crawdads was her story to tell. I mean, it was very clearly like a story that she's been thinking about for a long time. And it is so vested with, you know, atmosphere and her story, and that's what made it successful.
Sure. I mean, well, everyone wants to look at the bestseller list and figure out who they have to knock down a few pegs.
Right.
So we get it. Ellen Hildebrand, thank you so much for coming to G-Thanks. Just bought it. And we hope to see you again soon. If you guys get the pepper grinder, whether it's for yourselves or for a gift, make sure you tag us on Instagram, G-Thanks Just Bought It Pod, and Ellen Hildebrand. I'm sure she'll want to know if you get it.
I do.
Thank you so much for coming. And like,
thank
you know,
you.
We are right on the cusp of, we're heading into Memorial Day weekend. I know this summer, the 28th summer is going to be a little bit weirder than we thought, but at least we have your 24th book to look forward to. And I am very grateful for that. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Caroline.